And welcome once again to another edition of A Plain Answer here at Redeemer Broadcasting. I'm Dan Elmendorf. Joining me on the phone line today is Dr. John Vance. Pastor Vance, it's wonderful to have you on with us today.
It's my privilege. It's always a privilege to be with you and with your listeners.
Now, I have a hunch that you went and got yourself a cup of coffee or tea or something prior to this, and because that's what I did. I was a little bit late in calling you because I had to get my cup of coffee, and then my computer didn't want to work. So then we had to change some settings and back and forth, and so here we go. We're finally going. There's a lot of stuff in the news right now. I think this is going to be one of those fireside chats again. There was a number of news items. I don't know which to pick first. Well, why don't you pick? What's on the top of your mind, Pastor Vance, that you'd like to talk about first?
Maybe South Africa. That might be strange.
Oh, yeah.
Just to hear that. But I was struck by how poor a reception these South, I think 57 of them were brought to the U.S. For the reasons in South Africa. But I was struck how these refugees are considered invaders or not legitimate, whatever you want to say, and the news media has covered it rather differently than even criminal migrants into the U.S., illegal migrants.
Yes.
And I thought the double standard was so obvious that it's been on my mind. Why such poor treatment to these people? I looked at them on the TV screen, and it looked like ordinary people to me.
Who were
thankful to find some refuge.
They were.
Now, maybe your listeners don't know, but in South Africa, there since the ANC has risen to power, and in recent years, the last few years, it's turned quite anti-white, and it's due to the apartheid period.
Right.
A little bit of history in the 1950s. I looked this up the other day. 1950s, apartheid was officially, I think, ingrained or established in South Africa, and it lasted for about 40 some years.
Mm-hmm.
Where blacks were extremely discriminated against in public policy. But since about 1993, and of course, Mandela passed away, which was a good man, no question, in many ways, though I didn't agree with him politically. But they've turned violent toward whites, and they have a law that you can confiscate their farms. What this is, and I think most people may not understand, is that whites have been in South Africa for 400 years.
Mm.
And even before the Pilgrims came to America in 1620, they were probably there 20, 30 more years prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of got established maybe by 1640, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But these lands have been in the families for years and years and years, centuries, and some of them have been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And now the government has passed a law that you can't talk about the government's treatment of whites. It's a serious offense.
Yeah.
But the American media and the American left have embraced the government's position. So, yes, I'm concerned about those things.
Yeah. We have a friend there that we just met, you know, remotely, Peter Hammond, and he lives in Cape Town. He lives in Cape Town, and they have an effort going where some of the folks over there want to secede and have the Cape of Good Hope as its own country, so that these white, many of them Christians, have a place where they can actually live and not be killed. It's a very tragic situation. They have cries of kill the Boer, and it's just awful. They want to kill the white people, and we're not overstating this. I mean, this is what's been going on. So it's a terrible situation.
No question. I've had friends from South Africa, too, in seminary, when I went to seminary, I had a couple of friends and one professor from South Africa, and they've had a good society. It was by far the most successful country in Africa, all of Africa. But it's turning, I believe, into a Zimbabwe. If you remember the history of Zimbabwe, it's just a country to the north. It was also colonized by whites, and I remember Ian Smith on television, the president. It was a great, quite successful, the breadbasket of Africa. But Robert Mugabe turned it into an unlivable place.
Yeah.
And it's probably the worst country in Africa today, and I'm afraid that South Africa is in danger of going in that direction.
Yeah, there's one area where there's this long road, the Plasmoord Monument, I believe it is, and they have memorialized all the white farmers that have been killed. And it's just a white cross after a white cross, and it goes on and on. And all of these farmers have been killed. And it's a terrible genocide, really, that's happening. So pray for particularly the white Christians that are in South Africa, that they can live, that they literally can live.
70% of the whites are Christians, 70%, over 70%.
It's huge, yeah. May the Lord have mercy. And we've seen it time and again, Pastor Vance, when communism comes into a country, it's devastating. It is absolutely devastating. On many levels, you know, the spiritual, the religious, being able to practice Christianity openly, and the economic and everything. And yet when Christianity thrives, all the other things thrive. So it's like a no-brainer, but I hate to say it, but there's an enemy of our souls that goes around and he wants to enslave people.
Yes. Well, people should be go back and read Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He was a prisoner in the Russian Gulag, and he great author, great writer, and he wrote a number of things. And if people can get his address at Harvard commencement, which he was condemned for, but it was a great address, and you'll see the importance of Christianity for people's lives, and you will also see the other devastation that communism and Marxism brings to countries and lands.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's not a far stretch. Some of the people on the left here in these states of ours, what we might call blue cities, where they're heavily blue, the cities go to pot. They go to pot. You just got to wait long enough and it gets all messed up.
Our most beautiful city, according to many people, I've never been there, San Francisco, is unlivable in its downtown area.
Yeah.
People have fled, businesses have fled. Los Angeles is unbelievably bad at this point. Now, this is the Golden State, California.
Yeah.
One-third of all the poverty in America, people living in poverty, live in the richest state, California.
It's hard to believe.
And it's due to the policies. It's due to the legislatures, their policies. I just see where they, Los Angeles passed a law that the minimum wage now is $30 an hour. Well, of course, that'll destroy anything left of people earning a living, or teenagers in high school working, getting a leg up.
I saw a report today where one of the mayors was pushing for $50 an hour. It just doesn't stop. It's just idiotic. Well, today we're talking with Pastor John Vance, and we share something together, Pastor Vance and myself, and that is we have a great interest in culture and how that Christ is Lord over everything. He isn't just only Lord inside the four walls of the church, but his influence spreads worldwide, and it prospers people. It helps them live for his glory and to glorify him and to raise their families and basically be happy. And that's not the reason we become a Christian, but that's one of the benefits, certainly, that actually happens. And culture is important. Well, Pastor Vance, what else would you like to talk about?
Well, I just want to say, to follow up on what you just said, the scriptures say that in all things Christ is preeminent.
Right.
And that's a verse that we have to remember, that he's the Lord of all of life. Well, I think we could turn to something that might be of interest to a number of your listeners. I know it's important for the entire world of Christians around the world, and that is that there is a new pope that was elected.
Oh, yeah.
This pope is, ironically, and I say ironically because before the conclave, we heard on TV, at least I did, that there was no possibility of a pope coming from America. And lo and behold, here we have, what is his name, Robert Francis...
Prevost.
I try to remember by provost, which is an office in the university. There's a provost.
Right.
Prevost. And he's not old, in my opinion. Of course, some of your listeners may think so, but he's going to be 70 this year.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll probably have a reign maybe of, he'll be in the seat of, quote, Peter, for maybe 20 years.
Yeah.
That'll make a great, he'll be consequential.
Right.
For the church. And, you know, a lot of my friends who are Catholics, I had one to tell me in church on Sunday afternoon after they heard, were Westminster for preaching, they were coming to pick up someone and they just slipped into the service.
Sure.
A fellow who had studied for the priesthood, he couldn't understand why I wasn't a Roman Catholic. And he liked the sermon and everything, and he just said, "I just can't understand why you're not in our church,
mm-hmm.
in the church." You know, it is difficult for Catholics who embrace the papacy to understand why Protestants and Eastern Orthodox and people like that don't share the same view of the church that Roman Catholics do, and particularly with respect to the papacy. Now, remember, we share an awful lot together. We share Christianity together. We share Christianity.
I was going to ask you about that. Some of the highlights of what we do share together, they're major swaths of agreement, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the kernel of Christianity and much more is shared by Eastern Orthodox, Roman Catholics, and Protestants.
Right.
There's no question that the gospel, I believe, and can be found in all of those families of the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a matter of saying you're not Christian, but it is a matter of saying that I don't agree with you with respect to order and government of the church. And maybe some other things, like mm-hmm. Protestants would have a difficulty with the Immaculate Conception of Mary and a few things like that.
Yeah.
But as far as sharing the gospel, the death, burial, and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ and his coming again, we share that with all Christians. In fact, I don't think you can have Christianity without that.
No, and we share, maybe you mentioned this, but the Trinity. We share some of the same creeds, the Trinitarian creeds, I believe.
Well, it's interesting. I've been reading on creeds. Part of my, mm-hmm. I told you I was writing something, and I will get the file back.
You lost your file.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Computer. Yeah, it is. It is. It's terrible.
Oh, I can really relate to that.
And hours and hours trying to reclaim it.
We got to get our son Stephen to look at that, and maybe he can figure it out for
He's
you.
He's an expert. He's an expert.
He is.
But we share these creeds together. Now, it is true that the papacy did not arise until the very early Middle Ages, as we would understand it as a pope.
Mm.
Probably, really, the first, we could say the first pope from the Protestant standpoint and from a historical standpoint was not until after Constantine the Great, probably 430, something like that, and the papacy developed largely in the early Middle Ages to the High Middle Ages. That's the papacy that we understand today. But in the early church, there was an apostolic succession, but they didn't see the Pope of Rome as being the having universal jurisdiction over the entire church. And the Eastern Orthodox, of course, never accepted it, and Protestants broke from it in the 16th century. But these ecumenical councils are very important. There's seven of them. The first four are extremely important because the basic creed for all Christians is called the Nicene Creed, which the Council of Nicaea in 325, mainly Eastern bishops or patriarchs met, and their others, elders, and they refined our understanding of the Trinity. And this development took place at several more councils where, while in the New Testament we have such phrases as, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, the Father and I are one, and so forth, and those strong passages in Hebrews and other places in Paul's writings about Jesus' relation to the Father, but it was not refined in a, if you will, a scientific way, I'm going to use that, until these councils, because heresies arose in the early church, and they had to be dealt with, and they had to be dealt with in a very careful way to understand who Jesus is, to understand how important and precious we understand the one God as Trinitarian. And we understand that Jesus, who came into our world to seek and to save the lost, was fully human as well as fully divine. And these creeds protect that, the Nicene Creed. And the Nicene Creed, by the way, is a universal creed accepted by Orthodox, accepted by even the Oriental churches of the East, Roman Catholics, and almost all Protestants. And that is very important that we understand the Trinity. It's the most basic doctrine that we have in the Christian faith. And this was developed in three other creeds that followed. One in 381, that would be the First Council of Constantinople, which refined the creed a little more, the Nicene Creed. And then in 431, there was the Council of Ephesus, and the big council in 451, which is called Chalcedon or Chalcedon. So that's, they formed the basic of Christianity in these creeds, and it's the Orthodox faith, the straight or correct faith, and we all share that. And it's very important that we share all of that.
It is.
Even though most of these councils were held in the Eastern churches, but they're very important for all of us. Mm. So we share that, and we're on the same side when it comes to contending with a deteriorating culture.
Oh yeah.
In our day.
Oh yeah. I sometimes wonder if in the past we've had a troublesome relationship with the Soviet Union, with Russia, and yet there's a lot of Orthodox over there, and we share so much together. I would hate for us to get into any kind of a conflict with them. I think we got to be very careful to establish friendship and not send bombs. And it was only, a half a year ago or 8 months ago, the previous administration, there were some people who wanted to bomb Russia. And I'm saying, what? Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, potential for a warfare on a level that would devastate both countries.
Yeah.
Us and Europe. I don't think people think things through.
They don't.
We're at a place in history where we can't afford to get to the place where there is a nuclear war.
Oh, no.
It would be devastating. China has nukes. It's a dangerous world that we live in, and it's a different dynamic than it was in the 50s.
Yes.
Listen, I grew up in the 50s. I'm not going to tell everybody how old I am, but I grew up in the 50s, and we remember well building bomb shelters.
That's correct. I actually was on the tail end of that in the 60s in grade school, and bomb shelters were being built, and we took a little little school trip in the neighborhood, and we went into a bomb shelter to look at it, and we would practice getting under our tables as if that would do anything, but that's what we did in those days. You know? Yeah.
Well, those nukes were quite small and primitive in a way back then, and you might wipe out a good-sized city, but we could wipe out this country today.
Yes.
With the nuclear arsenals that Russia possesses, and yep. we possess, and China possesses, and even some other countries. Well, in India and Pakistan, that's been in the news too, and that's why that's such a dangerous yeah. conflict. Very dangerous conflict in that part of the world, and it remains a sore spot, and we have to watch that and monitor that. And I'm glad that the current president intervened.
Me too.
To get some kind of peace settlement.
Me too. I've been impressed with the statesmanship that we've been seeing the past several weeks. Today we're talking with Dr. John Vance, and we have maybe 3 or 4 minutes left, Pastor Vance. We were talking about the new pope. We are Protestants here at Redeemer, and we're of a Reformed persuasion, but we have a great interest in this pope. We want to see him be as faithful to the scriptures as possible and as faithful culturally as possible. That will promote peace and safety for many people around the world. Any comments yet remaining on Pope, what is it, Pope Leo?
Yes.
Pope Leo the 14th, I guess his title is.
Well, he's an Augustinian.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a little story. I was invited to West Point along with a Jesuit and an Augustinian to speak concerning pro-life issues. And when we got there, the three of us were in a room, and I noticed right away that the Augustinian and I connected quite
right.
readily, and he more with me than he did with the Jesuits. In a real sense, Augustinians are closer to Protestant theology. In fact, it's probably very close,
yeah.
particularly with the Reformed faith and or Lutherans and Reformed. And we hit it off, and we're on the same side in a real sense
mm-hmm.
than of the Jesuits. Augustinian theology, Protestants inherited, if you will, through Augustine, as he interprets the Apostle Paul.
Right.
The doctrines of sin and grace, which we share very much with the Augustinian tradition, and this pope who went to Vanderbilt, which is an Augustinian university. Now, I'm sure it's secular in many ways, but in the theology department, it's Augustinian. That's very close to evangelical reform tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And make no mistake, I think that's important for reasons of the gospel.
Yes,
so,
it is.
So it'll be very important, I think. He'll have a very clear message, I think, when it comes to the gospel.
Well, I hope
but
so.
You know,
that's encouraging.
I do, too. I do, too. Anyway, we do live in turbulent times, and we're going to come down on different sides in many issues because we, as the Apostle Paul says, we look through a glass darkly, or meaning that all of our knowledge is partial and not whole. We get glimpses here and there, and we can get on the wrong side mistakenly, do the wrong thing in a confusing world. There's no question. Then I think that the demonic world is active in deceiving, if you want to know the truth of. I think it's a very active
yes.
World of deception that we live in. There's a passage in Isaiah I'd like to share with readers before we close. It's very quick. I'll just read this. The scripture says here in Isaiah 26, starting at verse 3, "You will keep in perfect peace him whose mind is steadfast because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord The Lord is the rock eternal." I have AFib, and I'm going to have a surgery here pretty soon, Lord willing, with an ablation. That when I'm in AFib, I go to that passage. I've memorized it. You know, I'm at an age when you don't memorize stuff, but I memorized this passage
yeah.
in another version of the Bible than I just read. But something like that repeated in your mind over and over can take care of a lot of anxiety.
So true.
I'm talking not just health-wise. News-wise, current events, what's going on in the world, what's going on in your family, what's going on in your church.
Yeah.
A passage like that repeated, "Thou will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee because he trusts in thee."
Yeah.
That's the King James. What a blessing to remember that. We're not always going to agree. It's a tough world we live in. But God has chosen for us to live by faith before his face, and he has not abandon us to our own devices. He sent his son to seek and to save the lost. Oh, my. What a wonderful framework that is to think of in a world where things can and do go wrong.
Amen. That's a wonderful point to end on. Our friend and board member, Pastor John Vance, has joined us today. And Pastor Vance, may God bless you and your family, and may he protect your physical heart and help this AFib to be taken care of. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dear listener, please join us next week for another edition of A Plain Answer.
My God is King of all the earth. My God is King forevermore. The nations come to worship Him. My God is King forevermore. My God is King of all. God is King forevermore. The nations come to worship Him.